Hey everybody, welcome to Barca Talk. This is Brian Henderson coming to you from Buffalo, New York, and joining me from Madrid, Spain, as always, is Gabriel Quiroga.
Brian, my Barca brother from another mother. What's going on, buddy?
Well, we just finished watching the Argentina-France match, and I'm personally sad about it, but only I'm sad for Messi. I'm not shocked or surprised because, you know, we knew going into this tournament that Argentina had failings, had flaws, a lot of them, and France just made everything super clear. It's like, you know, it's like when there's cracks in your cement, you don't necessarily see them until it gets wet. Well, France just rained down on Argentina and exposed all their cracks in all their hideousness. So I'm sad for Messi, but I'm not surprised.
Well said. I think we should just finish the podcast right there, buddy.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, great analogy, right? I mean, oh my gosh. I was watching this with my friend and we were just both at the same time. First of all, Mbappe. Good Lord, how fast is that guy?
He's so fast. And yes, he's got a good touch. He's good on the ball. But the whole team, I mean, Pogba, even Griezmann looked fast. And I don't think of Griezmann as a particularly speedy player. I mean, he's got a little bit of speed, but I don't think of him as a terribly fast player. And even he was making the Argentina back line look like slowpokes, you know?
So I was telling my friend, it looked to me as though Argentina was like the senior golf tour and France was like the PGA. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like these guys, talented, you know, individually are good, but their pace was so slow. Like the only one that you saw was maybe obviously Messi and Di Maria flashes. But other than that, there wasn't any pace to be found anywhere in Argentina. And Mbappe looked super, like double as fast because of how slow Argentina was. And especially on that first penalty, it's just amateur hours, 3-1. If you're going to foul, like, you know how I always tell you, if you're going to foul, at least foul outside the box so you're not creating that penalty opportunity. But, oh my gosh, this match, correct. You're right. France just found every flaw and exploited it to the max.
Yeah, and I mean, I was feeling pretty good at the end of the group stage for Argentina because Messi scored that really great goal. We got that good goal off of Rojo. They looked more organized. They had good shape. But, you know, that opponent just wasn't at the level that France is at. And France, I think France looks really good and really strong. But we'll get to predictions later. But what else? You said you had a lot of hot takes on this. So what do you got?
Well, I mean, the first thing, too, is, you know, I kind of disagree with how they played in the group stage. I still, even though they won their last game, I think they barely survived. You know, again, it's through the last minute goal just to get through the thing, you know. And, you know, for me, it goes down to Dybala. Why isn't that guy playing on the field? That guy is electric. He has pace. You have to get him on the field. There's just, for me, there's just no, you know, doubt that he shouldn't be playing. I mean, he at least gives you something on a one-on-one possibility on the wing. And you need that, especially against France, where they kind of have to, like, all they were focusing, I don't know if you saw, but Conte was, you know, just focused on Messi the whole time where he was going.
Yeah.
And if you have Dybala over there and then Di Maria to kind of give some outlet, some speed, then all of a sudden that may change a little bit. I'm not saying Dybala is going to save the team, but you just have more opportunities in the match. And that's what, you know, Argentina was lacking in this match, even though they had a bunch of possession.
Well, I mean, and again, it just, this is the kind of match that shows that you can have possession, but that doesn't mean anything. You don't, the game's not called football possession. That's not how you win.
Yeah.
All you need is some good breakaway plays, and when you have speed like that, like France does, you're bound to get them, especially against this geriatric-looking back line. I mean, Mercado, I don't even know Mercado. How old is this guy?
Who is this guy? I kept with my friend, I'm just like, get Market off the street.
Yeah.
I was just like, get him off the field, Market, get off the field, you know? Who is this guy? This guy, I mean, so my other take is why, you know, with this game, You know, it's a single elimination at this point. Just go with Kun Aguero and Higuain with Messi behind them and Dybala. Like, I don't understand why you just don't go with your best attacking force to try to put pressure on France. And when I saw the lineup, I just had the same reaction. I was like, who is this Mercado guy? Market, you know, who is this guy?
I mean, I've seen moments where I felt like he looks good, but overall, he's just, he's 31. He's a bit slow, but here's the main thing. It's not so much that he's slow on the run. For me, that's a problem. It's that he's slow to pass. You give him the ball and he's going to hold on to it. He's going to look all around him at that point rather than before and then try and figure out what he's going to do. And really, with the exception of Messi, everyone on Argentina sort of plays like that. Like they don't pass the ball quickly. And if you don't have foot speed, if you don't have speed in your players, you got to use the fastest player on the pitch, which is the ball.
Yeah. I mean, again, with the whole coaching debacle as well, you know, you see him on the sideline, you know, he's making no decisions on the sideline. You know, it's basically Messi, Mascherano, and maybe some other guys on the bench, but Sampaoli makes no decision. The other thing too is I don't understand, you know, Messi is such a playmaker. Have him play a little bit more, but then if you have Aguero and Higuain to give some pressure, then who knows what kind of opportunities you're going to have, you know? And the other thing too is having Mascherano play kind of that center back, weird defensive role. Like I would have had him play a little bit higher to connect with Messi and just to have a little bit, but man, the goalkeeping from this guy, I don't even know who this guy is. He's like the third goalkeeper from Argentina. Just awful. Just as bad. They almost gave away at the goal in the second half when they miscommunicated.
Yeah.
They just look supremely outclassed by France. I mean, you go to France's every line and you're just like, wow, Varane, Umtiti, right?
Yeah.
Kante. Like my friend just kept commentating, Conte just went and ran there and now he's back on the other side. He's just like, there's number 13, you know? And again, Giroud never does anything for Chelsea or Arsenal, but he set up that, that counterattack goal was, you couldn't even draw that any better. I mean, that little drop off pass to Mbappe, and Mbappe just finished it. So again, like you said, France exploited every flaw. And to me, I didn't have faith going into this match that Argentina was going to pull it off. Obviously when they were up 2-1, gave you a glimmer of hope. But it was too early, you know, too soon, you know.
But that crack from Di Maria was really nice.
Correct. It was. It was very nice, you know. And also the equal.
Life in Madrid.
Thank you. Thank you for the horn. Thank you for the baton, huh? The other second goal by Argentina when they went up 2-1 was a nice little play where Messi kind of did a hockey thing where you just kind of put the ball into the area and then they got a deflection and by Mercado actually. But as I was telling my friend, I said, yeah, that's where Mercado's horrible first touch came as an advantage.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Mercado had any idea what was going on. He just happened to be there. And I think Lloris would have saved Messi's shot. So it worked out nicely that Mercado was there. That was pure luck. It was a total fluke. It was a nice take, but Lloris had the angle.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just reading on Twitter that Mascherano has officially just retired from the Argentina national team. So
yeah.
I mean that was coming. Unfortunately, you know, Mascherano is one of those guys that you'd love to have on your team. I wish he just would have been more of a defensive midfield like role but he had to worry about that back line so much that he could not be as complete as he could have been, you know. In this match you could see he was always constantly concerned about the defense behind him, you know, because if they went past him it was pretty much a scoring opportunity.
Yeah, because Otamendi and
Otamendi
and Rojo are not good center backs.
Dude, Otamendi is the biggest hack I've ever seen in my life. This guy, he has absolutely terrible passing, right? Like he tries to make these amazing through balls and they always get stopped.
Yep.
His fouling is atrocious. Like it constantly puts you in positions where you have to defend free kicks. Then he almost took out Mbappe. I don't know if you saw that at the end.
Yep.
He's just like one of those, he just seems like an asshole. Right. He just seems like an asshole guy. And, you know, he's just a hack, man. I just can't stand his game at all.
Yeah. And the thing I was thinking is how France was playing much more of a game that I enjoy watching. Right. It was a little bit more slick. It was more fluid. They were very organized. Everyone had a nice touch. They looked good. And again, with the exception of Messi, Banega at moments, I like Ever Banega and Di Maria at moments. Argentina was mostly just like bruisers. They just look like they were, you could tell they were outclassed. And so whenever a team is outclassed on the ball and with positioning, what happens? People get cards, they start fouling, they play real physical. And that's what was happening in this match. Like most of Argentina, they just couldn't hang So there you go. And strangely, Otamendi did not get a yellow card. I was surprised by that. But by halftime, Argentina had three yellow cards: Mascherano, Taliafico, and Rojo. They were all trying to protect Otamendi, I think.
Yeah, yeah. But just Otamendi, man. This guy, you know, it's funny because I think when he was playing for Malaga, I think, back in the day, he had a lot of potential. He had like a huge upside. And then Manchester City signed him for Malaga. I believe it was Malaga. They signed him and he just couldn't hang in the Premier League. And I think he's still on Man City. But man, his game, like I said, if you're going to be super physical center back, then be really smart about it, you know, like almost like John Terry was, right? John Terry wasn't the fastest and he wasn't the best passer, but physical in the air and physical he was, you know, and he knew how to kind of be, you know, touching that line of being dangerous, you know, and also being physical, right? But Otamendi is just completely reckless and he's not very good. He's not supreme in the air and he's not very good at passing. So it's just like,
yeah, and John Terry was good at positioning. Otamendi is not as good at positioning either.
Yeah, and so again, you have your third string goalkeeper, terrible center back pairing, no midfield with chemistry, Messi doing all the work, Di Maria on his last legs, and Market. You know, dream over.
Market is closed.
The market is officially closed, man. So yeah.
So yeah, again, sadness for Messi, but no surprises really with the outcome. And I don't know. We'll see if Sampaoli, given another 4 years in his contract, because he's gonna have it. If he can, yeah, you know, get control of the team again, make some changes in the squad, maybe work Dybala in. If he doesn't do that, I don't know what he's gonna be thinking. But let's move on and talk about some of the other Barcelona players,
sure,
who are featuring in this World Cup. I want to say Yerry Mina has been doing a good job for Colombia. James had to go out with that injury, so it's a little doubtful as to, you know, how far Colombia can go, if they can even get past the next round. But in the group stages, man, Yerry Mina showed up with those headed goals, and it makes me wonder, is that why we got him? Maybe that's the only reason we got him.
No, I don't think that's the only reason, but I mean, it definitely highlights this MF-er is really tall.
Yeah.
You know, he's really tall.
He's really tall.
He's really tall, and he is very aggressive in the air on those corner kicks, and that is something, you know, as a corner kick team, we don't really try to find goals that way. But obviously with Umtiti and Yerry Mina, now we have players that can actually get some headers in there. For me, like I've always said, give this guy some time and chances, and let's see what happens with a full year under his belt with training camp and so forth. You know, it's kind of funny because James had the same thing happen to him in the prior World Cup, where was kind of a breakout star, right?
Yeah.
And Yerry Mina has been having a really solid World Cup campaign. He hasn't been exposed as much. I would say in the first game when they got the red card, you know, that was a little bit – that's really hard to judge because it was a red card so early in the match. But all in all, he's had two goals and he's looked decent, you know, and that's all we're not looking for someone to be the superstar center back. We're looking for someone that's going to be able to spell Umtiti and Piqué, but also be serviceable and not to lose any ground when they do that. So for me, I want Yerry Mina to stay. I think he's having a quality World Cup campaign, and I'm interested to see how far Colombia goes in this round.
Yeah. So good job there. And then Suarez has been scoring a good bit for Uruguay, and they had a really good group stage. They were the first team to win all three of their games. They didn't concede any goals. And we're recording this just prior to the Uruguay-Portugal match, so we don't know the outcome there. I hope that Uruguay has beaten Portugal by the time people are listening to this.
I agree. I agree. You know, I don't want to see Ronaldo score. I don't want to see him score any more goals. I want to see him cry when they leave. And I want Uruguay to basically win like 3-0. That's my dream for tonight.
And do you think that's possible? I think it is.
Yeah, I definitely think, because not only has Uruguay scored some goals and they won the matches, but like you said, for me, the most important thing, they haven't conceded. Godin is so good, right? I mean, I like Godin a lot. Oh my God, I love Godin. I think he is super underrated. He's been a top defender for the last 10 years, but he's never mentioned because he's not, you know, flashy. He's not like a sexy pick, you know? But for me, he's been super solid. And again, even with how old he is, he's been able to anchor that defense for Uruguay. And again, not concede the goals. For me, that's the most important, because you know you have Cavani and Suarez up there to give you those opportunities to score.
Yeah, so hopefully, by the time people are hearing this, hopefully Portugal have been knocked out by Suarez and Godin and the rest of the Uruguayan team. Now, Brazil, man. You know, of course, with Brazil, everyone's going to be looking at Neymar and talking about Neymar, but really, it's Coutinho, I think, who's been showing up, and Pauli got a really nice goal with an assist from Coutinho.
Yeah, for me, I think Coutinho's been the best player so far, consistently over every match, right? Not only scoring goals, but obviously assisting on this one, but also just his work rate, you know, and the way he's been able to distribute kind of the opposite of what Neymar's doing. You know, like we said in the previous episode, Neymar dribbles all the way down to the corner, does all the step overs and loses the ball.
Right.
Whereas Coutinho, yeah, exactly. Whereas it's so frustrating, right? Whereas Coutinho has been setting up players. He's been in the right spots, scoring critical goals. And obviously in this one, just a really nice ball over the top to Pauli. And again, like when I was watching the match of Pauli, I'm just like, this poor guy cannot wait till the middle of July. You know, this guy's going to have the best vacation of his life, man.
Seriously, he must be exhausted.
Correct. I mean, imagine, like, you know, if you could read him like as a gas gauge, you know, like on a car, it's got to be just like on fumes, you know, just barely.
The light is blinking, man.
Oh my gosh. I mean, just think about it. Like, he has been playing since what, last January straight through?
Yeah.
January 2017, you know? And yeah, that's crazy. And especially, you know, it would be something different if, like, during the season of Barcelona, he did not play that much, but he played often. So he hasn't had a break. But yeah, he scored another quality goal. And again, Brazil's been looking good. But the thing for me is Marcelo's got injured. So that's going to hurt them a little bit. But, you know, they still look strong for me.
I agree. Now, Spain, of course, still has the highest Barcelona representation. Of course, it's not as big as I would wish or hope for. But that's because Barcelona doesn't have a ton of Spanish players on the squad right now. But we still have Piqué, Alba, Busquets, and Iniesta. And I don't think that they're except for Alba, maybe. You know, Iniesta, he's, you know, you can see that he has the elder statesman status, right? He, of course, has the brilliance. He has the vision. He just doesn't have the explosive speed that he once did. But I think Alba still looks really good. Piqué is still solid. And Busquets is still solid.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, I think, you know, it now, you know, with all the, you know, lower tier teams of the World Cup tournament, you know, closing the gap with these top tier teams, right? I think the biggest goal for, you know, Spain, Brazil, Uruguay, all these teams is just to get to the next round, right? Just to get to the qualifying rounds. Because after that, anything happens. You saw France, right? France didn't look all that great, you know, leading up to this, but today they look pretty dangerous, yeah. You know? And, you know, I think that's the same thing for Spain. You know, Spain didn't look all that great. You know, they got through. They were the top of the table. And now I'm curious to see how they handle Russia, right? Because on paper, they should be able to handle them. And like you said, Piqué, Alba, Busquets, Iniesta, all looking. They've played all the matches. For me, it's vital that Iniesta gets this rest so he can just be as explosive as he can be. Again, as we talked about, Diego Costa thing, I think that's what's really holding them back more than anything. I think they've been solid enough on defense. Obviously, they would want to tighten it up better, but we'll see what happens tomorrow. I'm curious to see if, you know, the referee gives an absurd amount of calls for Russia tomorrow.
Yeah. It would not shock me. But like I said, there's at least enough bribery money around to get Russia to the round of 16. But I don't know if there's enough to get them past Spain. I mean, the only thing that bums me out about Spain right now, because I'm rooting for Spain more than any other country at this point. But the thing that bums me out about the Spanish squad is that all of their great players, Isco, Asensio, Aspas, even Rodrigo, none of them are playing for Barcelona.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that point, but you know,
just as a Barcelona fan, it just no, bums I understand me out. That, you know?
Yeah. But still, four guys is still pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
And also, you know, you can still follow other Barca players, like we said, Coutinho. Obviously, Rakitic is having a great campaign with Croatia. So, and, you know, with the France national team as well. I get what you're saying, because in the last World Cup and the last two, you know, Barca had about, you know, half the team playing there. So, but again, this is, you know, the World Cup cycle that is.
Right, sure. And I have to say, Spain are looking surprisingly good given the whole debacle with Lopetegui and then Hierro having to step in last minute. You know, clearly, just like you said, you know, he's not trying to change anything. He's just trying to continue what Lopetegui was doing. And I have to say, in that last match against Morocco, I started feeling like maybe I've been underrating Diego Costa. I like how he was running outside of his area and how he was trying to create space and help. But Aspas, man, that that goal from him, it just makes me think, why isn't he playing more? Or Rodrigo, for that matter. Because Rodrigo's even a little bit younger. He's got a lot of potential.
They're just quicker, you know? Yeah. And I think with the style of play of Spain, it's just a better link up, you know? Aspas just always looks comfortable, and he's scrappy too, you know? With that second goal against Morocco, was kind of a scrappy goal. He was in the right position. But also leading up to that, he had some other opportunities. I just think he understands the role of a Spanish striker better than Costa.
Yeah, exactly. So that's more or less my roundup. Aside from all the people we've mentioned right now, Dembele, he's featured a little bit for France. He hasn't done a whole lot. Right now, as far as attacking goes, I think Mbappe is the Frenchman. But who else are you looking at?
Well, we also need to mention Germany. Remember last week you talked about the curse?
Right, the holder's curse.
And this has caused quite a debate among, you know, on Twitter and newspaper writers and so forth, because, you know, like we said, Spain, Italy, and now Germany, right? The group stage. And like I told you last time, I just think that you really need to flush out the team for every World Cup cycle, because again, the reports are coming out from Germany that the camp was divided. You had players that weren't, speaking to each other, this type of thing. You just can't have that in your camp, right? And also, Yogi Löw's been there for a long time, you know? And so even though it's only, you know, they don't play that often as a national team, the voice becomes not boring, I want to say, but you just don't react to it as much, you know? And you saw that every match that Germany had, they had a different lineup and different substitutions. So again, Yogi Löw was looking for anything to stick, and they just really didn't have the strategy. And also their players just looked old and not fast, and you know, they didn't have an imagination. So again, remember, these are the same players that have played in the last World Cup, the European Championship, and then this World Cup. So it's, you know, you really, some, you know, these federations, if they win the World Cup, you have to really look at the coaching and the players.
Yeah, I mean, forward. It is very, this particular situation with Germany is very much like Spain in 2014. You know, they essentially fielded almost the same exact squad, the same exact lineups in 2014 as they did in 2012 in the Euro and 2010 in the World Cup. And at that point, you know, Xavi was a little bit beyond his peak. You know, and that became clear. David Villa was a little bit past his prime. And again, Del Bosque, a soft-spoken man to begin with. You know, clearly he's wasn't getting through to them. And they were just trying to, like, ride that same wave. But, you know, 4 years later, it's not the same wave.
And also, Del Bosque is almost like one of those guys that always has crumbs in his mustache, you know? So I can't really take him that seriously, you know, even though he has an amazing resume. But you're right, he's super soft-spoken. He's always, you know, it's like that, you know? And sometimes you need some fire and brimstone, you know? Sometimes you need some loudness. You need some, you know, some energy like that. And Del Bosque just didn't have that. So, like I said, I'm sad that Ter Stegen wasn't able to get the opportunity, but obviously it's going to be his team going forward, because Neuer looks, you know, past his prime. He's been there. You know, they were just talking about the 2008 European Championship when Spain won, because that's the 10-year anniversary.
Yeah.
And Neuer was the goalkeeper then too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was just like, wow, this guy's been on the team for a long time. So I think it's time for Ter Stegen to get a shot. You know, it's his prime. He's ready for it. Playing for Barcelona, and I'm sad he wasn't able to get any playing time, but Avida Zay, Germany, Avida Zay.
Yeah, just look out for Ter Stegen in Euro 2020, though.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so let's get into the bracket challenge, our bracket challenge, our specific league, because at the end of the group stage, it turns out, have you looked at the standings?
No, that's why I depend on you for everything.
Okay. Well, so end of the group stage, Michael Miller was at the top of our league, and I told him as much, and he actually seemed pretty surprised. I don't know how he did it. So check this out. I was in second place, and at this moment that we're recording, I still am, I think. Okay. My wife, Megan, was in third, and you were in eighth.
Okay, I'm a soccer expert.
So what happened for you to come in so far down?
I don't know. You know, I think I really wanted South Korea to win the group, you know, and I was this close, you know?
Yeah. You were really banking on South Korea.
You know, I love South Korean football. Yeah, I don't know, man. I just picked the top dogs, you know? So
yeah.
I had Germany going pretty far. Sure. I had, and of course, they didn't even make the group stage. So,
I think Group F screwed over a lot of people because Group F wound up being a real shuffle.
Correct. And also with Mexico having that debacle against Sweden, you know, that really kind of changed the bracket as well. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that Sweden would have come in top of the group? That was a shocker. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, but, you know, good for them. You know, because I thought for sure Mexico was going to finally push through and win the group and really take, you know, this by the horns, but they shot the bet on that one. So anyway, you know, Brian, I'm just not that good at picking things. You
know, so. Yeah, I mean, some groups I got the top two or the bottom two out of order, but I did get them sort of the top two there. But there were I nailed three groups perfectly.
Okay, so, which ones?
Oh, which yeah. ones you want to ask?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't.
Yeah, no.
I thought maybe you had a.
No, I can.
I
tell
thought you.
You
had it ready for bragging rights. You know,
I nailed Group C.
Okay.
In order, France, Denmark, Peru, Australia.
Okay.
I nailed Group G, Belgium, England, Tunisia, and Panama. And that was a tight one, man. Thanks to that late Belgium win.
Yeah, yeah.
I managed to run that group, and I ran Group H, the most boring group in the tournament.
Which one was H?
Colombia, Japan, Senegal, Poland.
Yeah, but you know, did you hear about Senegal that they didn't advance because they had too many yellow cards to Japan's? That's crazy.
Yeah. Trying to institute some fair play action. Because, I mean, they were tied up on all the other things, right? They had tied up on points, tied up on goal differential, tied up on overall goals. And after that, it goes to discipline.
Correct.
And I get that. That makes sense to me.
You lack discipline.
Yes. Senegal, you lack discipline. Yeah,
you lack discipline. So we're going to see what, you know, who's going to pull off ahead here after these first round of games, you know? So ease up on the bragging, you know, it's still.
I'm not bragging. I'm simply reporting that I have 186 points and you have 125. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right. All right.
That is a
fact. It's a fact. We'll see what happens at the end here. So.
Yeah. I mean, I don't imagine I'm going to do too well moving forward, but I got what I got and I'm happy with it. I'm also something like 81,000th in the global league. So I'm not winning a trip to Spain anytime soon from Wanda.
No.
So this is just for fun.
Yeah.
All right. Now I got to tell you about this phone call that I got on Friday afternoon.
Okay.
I got a call from Victor Valenchek of the Houston Cougars Friday afternoon, and he had just come from the final match and the final ceremonies of the FCB camp there in Houston because, as you know, and as many of our listeners know, we sort of spearheaded a fundraising campaign to raise money to send at least one youth player to this camp, and we wound up along with the Houston Cougars. Honestly, I think they did most of the fundraising. We helped out a little bit promoting it here on the show. They sent two kids, brothers, Oscar and Christopher, to that camp, and they just finished it this week. So he was calling me just as he was driving home from the closing ceremonies. And you're going to love this. He shows up just as they're sort of starting the final match. And he hears the Champions League music. So they've got the kids.
Oh,
yeah.
What?
They've got the kids lined up ceremonial style. And they're playing the Champions League music before the kickoff and everything. And everyone got medals. And it was great. So he was just so excited and over the moon. And I wish I could have been there to see it. But Victor sounded really, really excited after having witnessed that. So we got a couple of pictures here and there of the kids and their kit, and we also raised enough money to get them an extra kit, which was great for their mom. Didn't have to wash their kit every night. At least she could do it every other night. Huge benefit. So there was already talk and plans in the works to get more Peñas involved to raise money for their local community and send local kids to these FCB camps in their areas. So we're going to push this even harder next year.
I would have fainted if I was like that kid and they started playing the Champions League. I would have been like, oh my gosh. And I just like, I know. You know,
it's your favorite song in the world.
Oh my gosh. I would have been so pumped, you know, to play, and especially wearing like the Barcelona gear as well. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What a, those kids, I hope they really enjoyed it because, man, just hearing about it, super jealous, super jealous.
Well, I hear that they looked a little bit tired by Friday, which is exactly what you'd expect, but I think they had an amazing experience.
Cool, cool. Well, I'm glad we were able to set that up with the Houston Kool-Aids. Like you said, we want to make it bigger and better next year, include more Peñas, and hopefully we can send more kids to have this amazing experience during the summer.
Yeah, because these camps are all over the U.S. They have multiple locations that do also happen to coincide with Peñas all around the country. So we want to try and connect anyone and everyone with those communities and try and build up so we can send 5, 6, 7, you know, and ideally each Peña should want to, I think, you know, kind of compete with each other a little bit for fundraising. And, you know, everyone's going to want to send at least one kid, I think.
Sure. And especially with the amount of time that we'll have to do to start the project again, I think we'll definitely have a good turnout. And I like that. Have a little competition of like maybe Houston and New York or Houston and Los Angeles or something like this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, all of them. Yeah. We'll have our own little league of that sort of thing. But so back to World Cup. Let's talk predictions. And I have to say, England is surprising me in this tournament, mainly because I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention to them in the lead-up. I just always assumed that they were, you know, stuck in the past like they always are, not playing super sharp. But they have, I think, some really good talent. Harry Kane is a really strong captain. He's doing well. Lingard looks good.
No, I was just going to say all those players, but more than anything, they're playing free and not with this pressure that the English team has always constantly had. And I also think Southgate, the coach, is the right man for it right now. He is a combination of cool, confident, and, you know, not the same recycled coaching tree that they've had before. And so I think that, along with the players that have played together for a long time, especially half their team is basically essentially Tottenham, so they understand how to play with each other, but they just look loose and free. And by playing that, it's been able to showcase their talent. You know, obviously the Belgium game doesn't really show that because both teams had massive substitutions.
Yeah.
But England has definitely looked really good for the previous two matches. So I'm curious to see how they'll do. I'm curious to see also just how far Brazil goes, you know, because now they have this pressure, you know, because remember last time when they lost to Germany 7-1, now people are especially here in Spain, they're really talking them up as to see how far they can go. So I'm curious to see if they can, you know, weather that pressure and see how far they go.
Well, as long as they can more or less keep their shape and not lose their heads, they could probably do pretty well because I think Brazil looks really good. But just for real quick, back to England, I have them in my revised bracket. I have them matched up against Spain in the semifinal. But of course, I still picked Spain to win. But yeah, Brazil, I think as long as they don't buckle under a little bit of pressure or getting, you know, giving up an early goal or something like that, I think they could go far. I think they could even make it to the final. I don't know if they could win it. It depends on who they're playing.
Yeah, so I'm curious to see how far England is. Like you said, the semis, that would be a very interesting setup. That would
be huge for them.
Spain, yeah. The other team, too, that's kind of under the radar that's been performing very well, too, is Belgium.
Yes, true.
I think, you know, Belgium, with all the hype that they've had before, the last World Cup with their up-and-coming rising stars, with the managing style of Roberto Martinez and also just the experience that this team has, they've looked really strong. And so I'm curious to see if they can kind of put it together and see if they can reach the semis as well.
They very well could, I think. Now, what about, so back to Brazil, because they're going to be seeing playing against Mexico. Which Mexico do you think is going to show up against them? The one that upset Germany or the one who got worked by Sweden?
So this is an interesting fact that Mexico has a really good overall record against Brazil in Copa America and World Cup matches. It's interesting, and I definitely think it's because of the style. So for whatever reason, the style of Mexican football is the antithesis for Brazil. So I actually saw some Twitter images of, you know, how Mexico has fared pretty well against Brazil for the most part. So for me, I think, you know, Mexico advancing, I think they're going to play, you know, carefree, just like England has. And I definitely think they're going to give Brazil some problems, because especially with Chicharito, just the way Mexico has been playing, the coaching that Mexico has this year, Their coach has definitely upgraded their tactics and their strategy. So I definitely think it's not a walk in the park for Brazil by any means. I could definitely see it going 2-1 either way, 2-1 either Brazil or Mexico. So again, this is what I love about the groups, you know, these knockout rounds, is because, you know, someone has to win, you know, and they can't just sit back for points, right? So now they have to actually go for it. We saw today in the Argentina match when Di Maria, or actually when they got the market goal from Mercado, right? The market goal.
Right.
You could see then all of a sudden the tide turning, that France had to really go after it, right? So that's what I love about the knockout. So I'm really – look, all these matchups are awesome. And, you know, like we said, Brazil, England, Belgium, I just think they've been looking pretty strong. But again, you never know what happens in these knockout rounds. I actually kind of want Mexico to go one more round. I think it would be interesting, but I'm kind of weird about it because I want to see Brazil advance. So I don't know.
Yeah, and you can't get everything you want. Like, I would like to see both of them go forward as well. But
yeah, can't they just get both awards?
Yeah,
can't they both just advance?
Can't everyone just get a trophy?
Yeah, exactly.
World Cup turns into a participation award.
Correct. Here's your participation World Cup trophy. Thank you.
Barca Talk is written by Gabriel Quiroga and myself, Brian Henderson. Editing and music is by Brian Henderson. Social media management by Gabriel Quiroga. Tell a friend about us and become a supporter of the show. Just kick in a few bucks a month at our website, barcatalk.net. Until next time, Visca Barca.